Hello, everyone, and welcome to Million Dollar Decorating, the only podcast devoted to the worlds of design, decorating, and beautiful living. I'm your host, James Swan, and I am thrilled to have you subscribing to the show today. Remember to head over to our website, milliondollardecorating.com, to learn more about our family of design enthusiasts. Add your name to our email list, then follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. You'll be part of all the great things that we have going on. And the really great thing that is happening right now is that I get to introduce you to our guest today. He was born in New York City and graduated from the Rhode Island School of Design with degrees in fine art and architecture. He currently works in the Brooklyn Naval Yard designing buildings and building furniture. Drawing on his training as an architect and a lover of lore, he designs work for the modern explorer. His studio is a workshop specializing in unique and handcrafted objects. The studio produces original products and custom designs for the discerning collector with an affinity for heritage techniques and heirloom quality. Each piece narrates the story of its materials, creating innovative and precise designs with a timeless aesthetic. Turns out he's very busy making the world more beautiful. Asher Israelo, welcome to Million Dollar Decorating.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the interview. That was really a beautiful words you put to my work. And yeah. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, thank you. We're excited to have you with us. And as we do with all of our guests, take us back to the very beginning. When did you first fall in love with design, architecture, and art?
It's funny you ask. I feel like I've been surrounded by it a lot of my life. My mother started as a sculptor. She graduated with a degree in fine arts and was a working sculptor until she had my twin brother and I, where she became more of a full-time mother for a while. Although she's actually getting back into it now. So I grew up around a lot of really beautiful artwork, and my mother would bring me especially to a lot of the museums and galleries at a fairly young age. There's some pretty funny stories early on of her trying to bring us when we were a little bit too young to appreciate some of the more nuanced artwork and installation pieces that some of her friends were working on in Soho at the time. So, the answer is as long as I can remember. I've really been surrounded by some beautiful things and really loved a lot of the process of production and learning materials, honestly. My mother and I actually did take some sculpture courses together while I was even in high school, and I was always very much interested in learning that part of the process, not just the viewing of art, but also the making of it, and just, you know, really getting my hands dirty. That continued into college, where I was studying more of a liberal arts education and found myself more and more in the art studios until I really stopped wanting to be surrounded by the intellectual crowd as much as the people who are making things and really experimenting with materials more than thoughts. Although I think both are very much important, I think learning through actually building and making was much more where I was headed. So I transferred to the Rhode Island School of Design, where I continued that practice. I went into the architecture program there mostly to understand how to operate at larger scales. I was building larger and larger sculpture work when I was still in school before RISD, and I continued that practice with the architectural work, but also realized that I still liked getting my hands dirty. So while I was doing architectural work, I started training myself in the woodshop there and getting really involved in the model making process, really enjoying making the models and designing through building again, and realizing that that was an integral part of the process of what I was doing. I guess that was the beginning of it all. And it's been somewhat of a fluid process of learning different techniques and processes while I work on new ideas and experiments.
So Asher, I'm fascinated listening to you tell about your exposure to the art world at an early age with your mom and her sculpting and your sculpting work and then moving through school. It seems to me that there's an element of sculpture about much of what you have involved yourself in over the years. Would you say that's accurate?
You know, I have a really hard time discerning great art from great design. I think that there are elements of both. So I like to try and integrate as many sculptural elements into the work that I do as possible. So, you know, we do some production work in my studio, but a lot of it is very personal, it's intimate, it's custom. So we really do respond to the materials that we're using. And as you actually described in the beginning of the interview, narrate the story of the materials as much as the process of the production. So I think that, you know, when design is elevated to a certain point, it becomes art or sculptural. And I really strive for that in a lot of my work.
So is the material your jumping off point for a new item or a new concept?
It's funny. It wasn't always the case, but the more I surround myself with materials, and I think that some of that is actually from the architectural background as well, of understanding materials and how they're used and how they haven't been used yet, but how they could potentially be used. Yeah, a lot of it is. A lot of the work that we do right now is brass inlaid into wood, and that was just, you know, me sitting in my shop late one night, seeing that it had been done, you know, forever, but really trying to experiment with how it could be done differently than it had been done before. So, you know, it just started with inlaying one piece of brass into a piece of wood, and then we started to create an entirely new collection based around that. Right now, I'm actually working on ways of insetting metal into stone. So it does start with a lot of the materials and the techniques therein, and then seeing how far we can push those techniques to create new designs.
Wow. Well, so tell us then about the work that you're doing right now. I mean, what is on the drafting table? What do you have your hands involved in right now that we can be looking forward to seeing in the near future?
Well, I'm working on a new collection, which I'm hoping to debut for Design Week this year. It has a couple different components. There's a bit of a conceptual side to it, which is new to some of the work, although everything I've tried to do tells a lot of the stories, usually very intimate and based around the clients. The previous stuff with a lot of the brass inlaid star maps that I've been doing into the tabletops are actual star maps where we'll get a specific day, place, and time from the client and essentially inlay a part of their own history into the tabletop. And it's something of a hidden story because, you know, they can tell their friends what the brass inlay means, whether or not it's specific or if it's just a, you know, motif. Right now I'm actually trying to push that a little bit further. I've been investigating somewhat on like almost an archaeological level, existing cultures that we don't know a lot about, that, you know, these sort of great heights of civilization, like the seven wonders of the ancient world, where we don't really understand how even these massive productions were created. So a friend of mine was recently in Peru and saw the Nazca lines, which is an ancient civilization in Peru that we don't even know why they were producing these, but essentially these massive drawings in the sand that date much further back than crop circles, although they have similar ideas because nobody really knows except from a much higher elevation what they look like entirely. And then taking that and realizing that that could have some sort of a design component. And there's something, I think, there's something eternal about a lot of what was done that lasted through, you know, millennia at this point, where the drawings of ancient civilization still, they hold some mystery and some power over us. So people flock to the middle of the desert to see these drawings, even though not even archaeologists or scientists really know why they were created. So I'm starting to work on a whole line of design, sculpture, and furniture that's related to those, where it's overlaying certain materials, carving out certain materials. Right now I'm working in stone and metal, trying to figure out how I can marry those two differently, but then also having hidden elements within the pieces. So, you know, only the person who knows the piece for a long time will actually understand, oh, there's a hidden compartment, or there's a story that's on the underside of the table. Because a lot of the, you know, ancient archaeological artifacts are these hidden stories, things that are more mysterious than they are known. And trying to bring that concept or that feeling out in the work is something that I'm working on currently.
Well, you don't set the bar very high, do you?
That sounds a lot more grandiose than it may turn out to be. But, you know, I like to set the ambitions much larger than a piece of furniture and then see where I end up.
Well, it seems to be serving you well so far. So please don't change your techniques on our account, okay?
It's funny that I'm talking about this because usually those stories or those concepts are things that I rarely even discuss with the people who I'm making the pieces for. They usually like the finished product and then I'll keep making those. But really, oftentimes there's a much stronger conceptual backing to a lot of the work that I do.
Right. Well, so you begin some of your thoughts around the materials. Where does the storyline begin to evolve? Or is that just integrated into the conversation about the materials?
It's interesting. I think this new series is a lot of both. Part of it was I haven't really worked in stone before, so it's a bit of an experiment in seeing what I can do with that. With the wood and the metal, it was almost intuitive, where I really like maps in general. I like star maps specifically, and I wanted to see how I could actually lay maps out in wood. And wood, with the natural qualities, has a lot of similar, I think, a lot of similar visual properties to maps scaled out, where you are essentially looking at a piece of wood, and it's got these grain lines that are very natural, and then overlaying this man-made information on top of it actually starts to tell the story of the two different processes of, you know, what's man-made and what's natural and how they actually intersect. So with the wood, my favorite parts are things that a lot of people were actually trying to take out of the furniture and tabletops. We were using a lot of live edge and leaving the bark on and leaving bark pockets inside or knots. And the way that the brass would intersect with those things, I found really inspiring because, you know, it's almost this maps in my mind are almost a violent conversation where, you know, a road driving through the middle of a mountain range is it's a cut through the earth. And then when you're actually cutting the wood to inlay metal, it's a very similar production process, just on a different scale. Understanding the piece of the material that I was working on and then being able to overlay these maps on top of it started to tell their own stories. And then on top of that, realizing that there could be a further conceptual component with overlaying people's histories onto the tabletop, I thought brought a new quality to heirloom quality furniture, or a new style to heirloom quality furniture, where, you know, instead of having had a piece of furniture that was passed on to you from your grandparents that had all of these stories brought onto it, you know, the piece starts out new, and then, you know, you've had many meals with your grandparents, and then your parents inherit it, and then, you know, you essentially take on that same piece of furniture, and it has all this embedded information, enabling new pieces of furniture to also have embedded information into them was something that I was striving for.
Wow, fascinating. Do you spend, or have you spent, time around antiques? And if so, I'm curious how that has influenced the work that you're doing on new furniture today.
You know, I'm just starting to get more into antique typologies. I was trained in architecture school, and a lot of the modern architecture thought is that you shouldn't know anything before, you know, 1900.
Of course.
Yeah. So,
don't cross this line.
Exactly. Yeah. If it wasn't modern, it wasn't. And, I'm starting to realize that there's, you know, even just on a technical level, how the craftsmanship was done 200 years ago for pieces that still exist is so important, to, sure, understand the new work, understand how to actually build things that will last that long, because a lot of the modern technologies make things that are perfect for the time being, but not necessarily have the same longevity as pieces that, you know, the techniques developed over centuries. So I'm starting to spend more time. I had the great opportunity to visit this amazing foundation called the Chipstone Foundation in Milwaukee earlier this year, where they have an unbelievable collection of early American furniture. And the curator there, named John Brown, brought me through the entire collection. And he's doing some unbelievable things with curation, but he really, more than actually appreciating the art and design history of the typologies, likes understanding how everything was built and why it was built that way. So he's a you know, flipping over chairs for me and showing me these like little hidden joints and details that you wouldn't really understand or know until you've really had hundreds of hours of studying this chair in person. So we had a lot of fun, and after seeing that and putting, and realizing how little I knew about furniture techniques and construction, I'm starting to spend more time with antiques.
Learning new things. It's always fun, isn't it?
Oh yeah. I think that, that's what really keeps me going a lot of the time is, I love the material processes, but also the experimental portions of it and learning how things were done 100 or 200 years ago and how that can be applied to today, is inspiring.
Very much so. Very much so. Now our listeners at home, Asher, are always interested in finding, maybe the connection to the story in their own home and how they can enhance that story. Talk to our listeners directly. Talk to them about nurturing the story in their own home through the addition of furniture and objects. What are your thoughts on that?
That's a great question. I think that everybody takes their home a little differently. I personally love surrounding my home and myself with work that either I found while traveling that has particular stories or particular memories attached to it, or, you know, making those memories within the home where, this will pertain to a question later on in the conversation, but, my wife and I just moved and we bought a small house upstate. And before we even had any furniture or anything, we were just inviting friends up and, you know, having big bonfires and having lots of food. And, you know, that I think that history overlaid onto the house as just, you know, this blank canvas really enabled us to both live and feel that we were living in this much warmer space, and then also created the stories that told us how we should, you know, design it better, how we wanted to live in it. So, you know, we were actually pretty slow to start designing the interior of the house because we wanted to just experience it as itself and understand, you know, this house has been here for 150 years. It's obviously got its own qualities and we should know what the house needs and deserves and how we're going to live in it. So it's a bit of a conversation, honestly.
Interesting. Very interesting. So when you think about the house, have you sort of gravitated towards particular rooms? Do you have favorites at this point, or are you still getting to know the house?
I think we're always still getting to know the house. We were just living in the city and now we're in the country. So there's a lot of new.
Big change. Huh?
Yeah, it's a big change. And there's a lot of, new considerations. Just, we're primarily using wood heat. So just how to actually create an infrastructure that's totally different than the way we were living and setting a totally different pace for our own lives it's new. This is our first winter here. But we are, you know, putting new furniture in it and starting to actually conceptualize how to build it out the way that we needed to. But I think we did need about 6 months of living in it, realizing that, you know, the kitchen is too small. We really want to be cooking much larger meals with much more friends, and we need a much bigger dining area. So building out the dining table to fit the amount of people that we want to sit around it. But I firmly believe that instead of the one fell swoop design approach that often happens where, you know, it's a totally finished and pristine project at a certain point. If one has the ability to slowly develop their own home over time, it'll have a lot more meaning where you find the perfect piece and it doesn't all look like it's from the same point in time in your own history where, you know, you may be obsessed with Shaker style furniture and that kind of design for a moment. But then you start looking towards, you know, Danish modern and realizing that there are actually some similarities between the two, but you have to find the perfect piece to actually transition from one style to the next. So I believe in much more of an eclectic collection than a firm typology and design.
Nice. Nice. And that takes time, doesn't it?
It does. I'm sure you know that as well.
All too well. All too well. So what would our listeners be surprised to find in your home, Asher?
Oh, that's a great question. What would listeners be surprised to find in my home? It's hard to say because right now we're we have we just had a daughter. She's about to turn one, and our home has currently been taken over by her. So it's a little bit of a mess with children's toys. But
as it should be, right?
Yeah,
as it should be.
Exactly. And I love trying to make it as habitable for her, just learning how to walk and seeing, you know, wow, watching a little creature essentially learn everything for the first time, things that we take for granted after years of walking, just how difficult every single step is really amazing to me. So making the space more functional for her right now, and then also enabling it to be transitional so that it still is something that my wife and I want to live in. It's not a giant playpen. Been something of a challenge in the past year. I guess on that note, right now there's a lot of different people's furniture and different people's artwork. I really appreciate bringing in friends' work into my own home. I've got some close friends who are ceramicists based in Philadelphia, and you know, we almost have like a bartering system where when they come up and stay with me, they'll bring a little piece, and when I come down and stay with them, I'll bring something that I made for them. So we're essentially, yeah, bringing back and forth a collection. I don't know if that's terribly surprising, though. I feel like that's something that a lot of makers try to do with one another, where there's a constant bartering. So yeah, let me if I could get back to that.
Oh, of course. Yeah. No. Second. You can surprise us anytime.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's shift our focus for a moment and think for a bit about design, style, architect, heroes of yours. Mm. If you had an opportunity to spend an hour with a hero of yours, could be living, could be deceased, who would you pick and why?
Oh, that's interesting. I think when I was in school and really starting to develop my own ideas about design and architecture, I was really enthralled with the work of Peter Zumthor. You know, he takes almost a spiritual approach to a lot of his work, so that it's not just about the design and it's not, you know, these flashy new ways of building things, but through, you know, a very intuitive process of production, it seems like he understands materials, he creates new ways to build things, and I'd love to just understand more about how he creates those things. You know, I've looked at a lot of his work, and there's certain projects that he actually created entirely new construction techniques to create a new building typology, and that I know takes years and years to understand and know that it's going to last and be built the way that he wanted to. So understanding how you can take essentially that experimental approach that I try to do within furniture and scale it up to the language of architecture is something that I'm very interested in. And also his approach to materials is something I find very inspiring, where every material has its own, not just constructible qualities, but also experiential qualities, where stone smells a certain way, it relates to water in a certain way, and the way that people interact with the elements around them is something that I think I like to focus on and really try to make a very tactile approach to design myself, and I'd love to see what his studio looks like.
That's a good pick, a very good pick, and it would be time well spent.
Oh, yeah.
Hanging out with him for an hour or so.
I'll have to learn Swiss first.
But. Well, there's that. Yeah. There is that. Give us the best design advice that you've ever come across, Asher.
The best design advice that I was given, or the one, something that I have for the listeners?
Yeah. Either way, just give us a morsel.
You know, personally, I like knowing what's been done before, but never using that as the limits. I think that every good designer is really pushing the boundaries of what's possible. Knowing what's come before them is important, just in terms of techniques and constructability, but then being able to see what's not been realized before. So I'd say personally, and what I like to see in everybody else's work is not being stuck in a certain typology, not really trying to speak to a contemporary language, but really developing your own voice. Because, you know, a lot of this has been happening for centuries, and a lot of it's been done before. So really understanding where you exist in the world is one great place to start, but also seeing what hasn't been done and seeing the possibilities within materials, within new approaches to materials, within new technologies is really inspiring and exciting. I think the Eames is believed that once you reach the edges of technology, you're finally getting into good design. And that's something that I wholeheartedly believe as well.
Living on the edge, right? Living
on the edge. it's dangerous in the design world because
it can be, yeah.
Unlike a lot of other arts or, you know, even types of design, we have to make things that are perfect from the prototype. You know, a lot of what we do in my shop is essentially perfectly finished full-scale prototypes because the pieces haven't been built before. We'll design custom work for clients. And, you know, we've had some magnificent failures therein as well. I don't do custom chairs anymore for that reason, because I think a chair needs to be developed over 6 months to a year. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to wait that long. But really being able to push it and also being confident that you'll be able to pull it off.
There you go. It's a double-edged sword.
It is.
Double-edged sword. Are you a book lover, Asher?
I do love books.
Yeah. Something told me that you would say yes to that. I'm going to put you on the spot then. Okay. Give us a book recommendation. One book that you think should be on the bookshelf of every design lover who's listening.
That's great. Every design. You know, I hate to sound redundant, but one of the most inspiring books I ever read that was related to design was Atmospheres by Peter Zumthor, where it was all about architecture, but not really discussing buildings at all. It was entirely about the presence of the experience of a building, or the experience that one has within a building, and understanding design from the intimate and the personal approach rather than from the overview of a plan, section, elevation, or a construction technique was really something that I'm still trying to understand and strive for in my own work. Mm. So.
Sounds fascinating. We will post a link to Atmospheres in the show notes section so that our listeners can click on that, add that to their design library, and chew on that a while. I think they will thank you for that recommendation. I know I'm looking forward to reading it. Oh. I am. Asher, we've come down to the last question. You ready for this one?
I don't know.
Well, let's give it a try, okay? We finish every show with the same question. So let me paint a picture for you and then get your thoughts. Imagine you woke up tomorrow morning in a brand new world. It's physically identical to the Earth that you know, but you don't know a single soul. You still have all the experience and the knowledge you currently possess. Your food and shelter are taken care of, but your new home is empty. All you have is a laptop, a mobile phone, and about $1,000 in your pocket. What would you do over the next 7 days to begin to decorate your new home?
You know, I've been thinking a bit about this question. It's a really tough one. I also have a problem with budgets, and, you know, I dream very big and love realizing those dreams. So 7 days and $1,000 is really tight for me. I think the first thing that I would do, and the first thing that I did within my new home with the blank slate that I had very recently, was just sitting in front of the fireplace. So what I would really do is make sure that I had the perfect hearth or wood-burning stove that I could both sit around and enjoy with friends. And so probably a couple of chairs set around there, and then also something that I could cook and make food for people, which is something I love to do already. You know, I think bringing in the warm smells of a well-cooked meal into the home alongside friends is really why we do what we do to begin with, to create the experience and the enjoyment of the space rather than, you know, the perfectly pristine space that almost feels untouchable.
Wow. Starting with food is never a bad idea.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if that's really a decorating because it's more smell, but, you know, I
think it falls under lifestyle very safely. Okay. I think it does.
I'll take it then. Yeah.
Asher, what a great joy getting to chat with you today. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you, James. It was really great to talk to you, and I really appreciate the time.
Well, we appreciate you and the work that you do. We look forward to following all that you're up to over the coming years. Keep it up, please. We want to say thank you to our subscribers also. None of this means anything if it's not for you. So thanks for tuning into the show, listening, and telling your friends about the show so you help us grow. Bounce over to the website, milliondollardecorating.com, where you can catch the notes from today's show. We'll post a link to Asher's website so you can follow all the things that he's busy doing. I know that you will want to do that. We'll post a link to Atmospheres, the book that he's given us as a recommendation. I'm looking forward to adding it to my library. I think you should do the same thing. So click on that link, make that purchase, and broaden your knowledge and understanding of the history of architecture by reading that book. While you're on our site, click a few buttons, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. And finally, and always most importantly, remember that it's up to you to make your world more beautiful.